Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Welcome back to the Red Seat Podcast, a podcast from the Over the Monster Podcast Network, where we just talk about the Red Sox. I am your host for today, subbing in for Jake in the one chair, Keaton DeRosier. Normally, I am the two chair here on this podcast, but Jake is on solo parenting duties and couldn't get in for our normal podcast this week, so subbing in for myself is Shelly, who you've heard on this podcast before, Shelly Verstrait. Thanks for taking my spot on the podcast, Shelly.
Thanks for having me back. I'm glad to be back. It's been like a while since I've been on this podcast kind of network thing. But I'm glad to be back. Somewhat because this team is quite frustrating. So. Yeah,
it has been quite a first month of the season. So let's just jump right on into that. Standings here in the American League East after a month. We have the Yankees in first place at 17-6. The Blue Jays are in second at 15-9, 2.5 back. The Rays are 4 back at 13-10. The Red Sox are 8 back at 9-14, only one game ahead of the Orioles at 8-15. Not exactly where we thought they would be here a month into the season. Fighting it out with the Orioles in the basement. What has been your reaction here to the first month of the season so far?
Oh my goodness. It's been absolutely rough. Just watching this team and just seeing just how they can't hit. It's just extremely frustrating. Like, I know that this team is so great offensively, but just they can't even buy a hit, even off the Orioles, just anyone. It's been extremely frustrating to watch because I know this team is better than this.
Yeah, frustrating really is the perfect word because like right out of the gate, the bullpen was nails, which wasn't really exactly what we were kind of expecting. The rotation had its issues, but it was basically just Verdugo and the bullpen for like 2 weeks. And then it completely shifted. Now the starters have been killing it. Bullpen has been really inconsistent, and now it's just been the Verdugo or the Bogart show. And we just can't string hits together to score multiple runs. I mean, not forget about like multiple runs in an inning and get a rally going. You can't score multiple runs in a game. And this offense is, we know they're going to figure it out. It's too good for them not to figure it out, including the addition of Trevor Story. It's just kind of like a, it's unbelievable that it hasn't happened to this point. And now they have guys who are doing really well. It's not just one hitter. JD's put together a decent line. Devers has a decent line. The power is throughout the entire lineup is just nowhere to be found, which is also weird. And maybe that's can be attributed to the ball. The power is down league-wide, so it's not just a Red Sox-specific thing. It just seems like it's hitting them at harder than it is other teams. So that part is frustrating. And it's just kind of like all of that combined has just been a really, really frustrating first month of the season. But you know they're going to turn it around and go on a run and make things more interesting. It's just kind of like that coupled with the way they were losing games, just devastating walk-offs in games that you know they should win. Sawamura throwing the ball into left field to give the Orioles a walk-off. And then it's just kind of like, sure, yeah, no, that seemed fitting. That seemed like a really fitting way to end that game. That made sense. And it was just, all of that was just frustrating.
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree. It's like, I really liked the team coming into the season. I mean, I didn't necessarily think that we were going to, you know, win the division or anything like that. But I thought that we would be playing better. And just seeing how we just basically fall on our face every single game for it's either the hitting or the starter or the reliever. We just always just fall on our face late in the game or something like that. That's what makes it so frustrating. I still believe in this team. I think that we could definitely figure it out. But it's been a very, very rough month.
Yeah, something that has gone significantly underrated now that I realized I'm trying to pull it up on the fly, but the Red Sox defense is actually among, or at least was very recently, among the best in the league in fielding percentage. And they, yeah, they are top 10 in errors per game in fielding percentage. And Rafael Devers has been playing a hell of a defensive third base so far this year. And all of that gets completely overshadowed by everything else. And something that we thought maybe might play a bigger role in this team to start, and something that we may draw our focus to, that's actually been a positive for the team, has just gone completely under the rug because of all of the other struggles. So we can't even kind of focus on giving them credit for playing really solid defense because everything else has been quite a disaster.
Yeah. I just now pulled up the numbers too, because I'm like, oh, are we actually really good in defense? And yeah, you're totally right.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, we are always looking at, like, we can't score anything. We can't do anything. We can't even look at, you know, the bright sides of this team. So I do think that will start to shine a light, like maybe some beat writers will get starting to talk about it. Maybe bring in some good vibes into this team, because I'm really thinking that this team is also feeling like we are, where they just feel just so defeated because they just got, you know, beat by a, you know, the ghost runner on second in extra innings, or someone made like a really bad error late in the game and it just like totally just screwed everything. So I don't really think that the team is really feeling it. But once they start getting it, and once that vibe starts getting, I think this team will definitely perform better than what they've done so far.
Yeah, and they are tied for fifth in defensive run saves in all of the entire major leagues, along with not committing errors and fielding percentage. This team is defense is surprisingly a strength, but you really wouldn't notice it unless you go looking for it.
Exactly.
That's how everything else is played out. So at least we can call that a silver lining. So let's dive into all of the other issues. Let's start with the offense. So starting with the top six, we kind of mentioned it. We got some issues here in the top six that we didn't really think we were going to have. Devers and Bogarts, their lines on the season look pretty darn solid. JD Martinez, too, although he has already missed some time with some injury. Trevor Story has struggled, hasn't really gotten anything going. Alex Verdugo started off really hot. His overall line now, not looking great. 238, 278, 375. Was curious about those two, so I did a little bit of digging. Verdugo really just looks like he's run into a whole bunch of bad luck for the first month, so that gives me some hope that that'll turn around. His BABIP is about 80 points lower than his career average mark, and his expected stats, his expected average over the first month is 308. Expected slugging is 594, which is top 91% on StatCast. So he is hammering the crap out of the ball. He's just having a whole bunch of bad luck, which makes me feel like that can turn around pretty easily. And then if you have a solid four at the top of the lineup that can put things together, then maybe that starts to turn things around. I was curious then if that was the same with Trevor Story. It unfortunately is not. His expected stats say that he is as bad as he has been playing. What's the deal with Trevor Story?
Honestly, I don't know. Like, I mean, there was like this thing, in, at least in fantasy baseball, that I kind of like really try to avoid. Players who sign like big long-term contracts, like their first big time like contract, I just avoid them in their first year of that contract. I think it could be that, oh, I just signed like this big contract, I really need to show off that I am totally worth this, and then they start to like really press the plate and just do like really just not their kind of, they just don't perform as well as they did, you know, prior to that. So I think that might be some of what's going on. And also put into the fact that this team is underperforming, so maybe Trevor is just like, just really just in his own head. I'm hoping that he gets out of that, but I think it might be a not a typical Trevor Story season for this first year in Boston.
I think there's a lot of that, because there's something to that with Devers' line. He only has a 2% walk rate so far, and he's swinging the bat a lot. I mean, he's hitting 299, so he's almost 300 marks. So it's not necessarily been a negative, because he's been making contact, but a 2% walk rate for Devers is really uncharacteristic, and you can kind of see at the plate he's been pressing, and he's certainly not the only one. So I think there is a lot to that, and the kind of like the longer the struggles go on, the more pressure mounts and the more you feel that. And I think there's some of that going on with Trevor Story too. I think I'm in agreement there. And plus there's the pressure of being in a new ballpark. Like, his strikeout rate is up about 5-6% where it's been previously over the past like 4 years. Strikeouts haven't really been his thing, but they have been this year. But it hasn't come at like the detriment to his walk rate or anything. So it's kind of like the similar, he's just swinging more, trying to press for results instead of just letting him come. Yep. And that's translated into a few more strikeouts. And he's not the only, and you know, Devers and Story, not the only ones in this lineup having that happen. And it's just the more that happens, the more the pressure builds, kind of the more it snowballs. But the more that some of these guys start to break out of these funks, then I think the more that starts to spread to the rest of the lineup, and these guys start to straighten themselves out, and then all of a sudden this team's on a 13-game win streak and we're feeling a lot better about ourselves.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think once a couple of guys, maybe some, you know, good luck hits fall in and they start to feel like a little bit less pressure and stuff like that, it will, you know, just go throughout the rest of the team and we'll feel better, you know, in about, you know, maybe half a month, once it starts to get warm in Boston, we'll start to definitely feel better about this offense.
Yeah. Moving on to something that we talked about on our season preview pod, which I expected to be an issue. Has been an issue, and that's the bottom three of this order. This has been an absolute rally killer, and maybe this has kind of helped make these struggles feel a little bit more elevated here, but the bottom three of this order, whoever they have had in there, whatever kind of rally that's been happening since once the lineup has reached these three has just immediately been killed, or you know, nothing has started from the bottom of the order here. JBJ, Dalbach, Plawecki, Vasquez, whoever they have in the that bottom three and the kind of the rotating cast of characters that they've called up, which we'll get to the bench here in a bit. Everybody is hitting under 200. Everybody is, most of them are striking out at more than a 30% rate. What is going on here at the bottom of this lineup, and is there anything they can do to kind of shake it up? I guess kind of we'll head into one of our other topics here, but they had tried to shake it up a bit with these rotating cast of call-ups. They had Jalen Davis here. They got Frenchie Cordero back up. They've DFA'd Travis Shaw, so they've at least removed him from the rotation. Christian Arroyo is another guy that they've had at the bottom of the order in that rotation and the bench. Is that the only solution that they have, is just kind of this rotating cast of call-ups until someone sticks? What, if anything, can they turn to fix this bottom three?
Yeah. Honestly, unless they call up, you know, either, I mean, I really want them to call up Duran. Maybe if he, you know, didn't get COVID a couple weeks ago, maybe he would have been up instead of, well, Frenchie probably would have been up even before him, just based on just his age and stuff like that. But I'm really hoping that, you know, Duran comes up at some point to take JBJ's spot. I mean, I love JBJ. I will always love JBJ. I just don't like him on this team currently because he can't hit. And it really makes me sad to see him struggling like this, just as a fan of his. But I really would love for them to call up Duran. He is hitting extremely well in AAA. And I think that he can hold his own in right field. When it comes to first base, I'm still... I don't know what they do. I don't think that Bobby Dalbec is necessarily this bad. I just don't think that he was as good as he was in like the last 2 months of last year. So I think that they're just gonna have to kind of deal with that for the time being, because I honestly don't think that Casas is necessarily ready either, because he hasn't been his top self in AAA. He is striking out like a little bit more than what you typically have seen from him. So I do think that he needs a little bit more time in AAA. And then when it comes to catcher, we're just basically stuck with that. So get used to really bad hitting from them.
Yeah. I think that's kind of, yeah, basically the par for the course there. Durant, his line right now in AAA is 360, 458, 560, also has 7 steals, only been caught once. That would be a huge jolt to that bottom three. I would really love to see that too, because I'm with you. I would much rather see JBJ in a bench role, not in the lineup every day. I'd rather give Duran the at-bats every day and give him a chance to let his potential shine. And obviously he is... seems like he is handling AAA just fine.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see him back and getting more at bats over JBJ. Use him in a bench role as the like late inning reliever, just kind of, or late inning defensive replacement when you need to. I think Duran can handle right field just fine. Completely with you there. Mostly with you on Cassis. I don't think he's quite there yet. But I don't think he's that far off. And I think, I don't know without like making a trade for someone that I don't know if there's nobody like they can pull off the street who I think is going to be a savior for the bottom three. You're probably better off just trying to let Bobby work through it if he can until Casas then is ready in maybe a month or so. So it doesn't seem like the solution is there. So Duran kind of feels like the only move, or at least the only move left.
I definitely agree with there. And it really stinks because that bottom half, that bottom three is just going to be just really difficult throughout the entire season.
If a month from now the team is in a similar situation where they haven't really gained ground, maybe they haven't lost ground, does that put pressure on moving a Tristan Casas timeline ETA up? And do you think that it should?
Honestly, I think that it should. Because if we're still kind of in this situation with the bottom half, the team is still kind of sort of in it, but maybe we just need a little jolt. Why not? Like, you're not going to get anything from that. So let's just go ahead and just bring up Casas. Let him just see major league pitching for the first time. And let's just go for development of him going forward. That's what I would do.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Any other notes on the bench there? What do we think of Franchi's return? Hasn't been hot. He hasn't struck out yet.
Yeah. I mean, he was hitting pretty well in AAA, and there was like a report from him that he was like really trying to improve himself in AAA. Like, he wasn't like down on the dumps that he was demoted and all this stuff. So I really like to hear that he was really just trying to improve himself. So I hope that he does well. I'm not expecting him to do well, but just seeing that he was positive with the assignment to AAA, it was like, okay, he's not feeling bad about himself.
Yeah, I think given the state of the rest of the lineup, why not?
Yeah.
Like I said, he was doing well at AAA. Worth a chance. Why not? See how it goes.
Yep.
All right. Moving on to the rotation. Surprisingly, a lot of positives here. Nathan Eovaldi is killing it, being his ace self. Michael Wacha has been pretty much keeping pace with Eovaldi. And Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock, both in their starting roles, have also produced quite well. What has your reaction been to the way that the rotation has started the first month of the season?
I'm surprised by two pitchers. I'm surprised by Wacha, and I'm surprised by Pivetta, but for totally different reasons. I didn't think that Pivetta would be putting up like a Wacha line. I didn't think that Wacha would be putting up what he's doing currently. I thought Pivetta would be a whole lot better than what he has shown so far. But even just watching Wacha, like, I've been enjoying it. Like, it's not like a totally dominant type of pitcher, but he's getting it done. And I love to see it. He made tonight, like, he made like a really good fielding play, right? So he's just a really... I've just been pleasantly surprised by Wacha.
Yeah, I have been super surprised. I didn't think we were getting anything.
Yeah.
I know that he had made the strides at the end of last year. I didn't really buy it. Brought the sinker back this year. So I was kind of even more confused by his success. But I think now I am just as confident in every Waka start as I might be in every Evaldi start right now. I think I have that much confidence in him. And maybe that's also due to just the inconsistencies of what we're used to from the starting rotation and what we have been getting from guys not named Evaldi the past couple of seasons. But I'm fully buying into that this is sustainable and real. I mean, maybe not, you know, in September, he may not be posting a 1.77 ERA still, but I think he's still going to be a really viable part of this rotation come then. And that's not something that I expected to have a feeling towards. So very pleasantly surprised. Hill and Pivetta. I mean, you kind of started talking about Pivetta. Pivetta's last two starts have been more encouraging. Obviously, his first two were quite atrocious. Last two, the strikeouts seemed to be back. Although, two starts ago, had an issue with walks. Last start was just giving up too much contact and too much hits. Although, significant progress from his first two starts. Are you buying into the mechanical changes? Do you think that Pivetta here is making progress in, you know, he's working his way back to what you thought he could be? Or are you maybe just trending out to being, or trending towards being out on Pivetta completely?
Like you said, that, I mean, I've been encouraged with his, like, last couple starts because he did have to face Toronto twice. And then, you know, Baltimore. And it's looked better because those first two starts, I was just like, oh gosh, this is the Pivetta, not the Pivetta. So it has looked better, but I don't know. I don't know. If he was our like fifth starter, I would be totally okay with it, but I don't even know if he's our fifth starter, you know, with like Rich Hill and the whole, who knows with the Houck and Whitlock situation, because that is still in flux. So if Pivetta was just our number five, I would be okay with it. But yeah, I just don't know where he quite fits in with our starting five.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. Because I think, you know, when we started the season, he was your number two starter. And I think he's still basically kind of in that role, even though Waka's performing more towards it. He's still kind of expected to be that guy and heavy that kind of role. Obviously not performing to it, but still needing to perform better than what he's been. So, but you did kind of start to lead into the next point there. Between Houck and Whitlock, how does that need to play out? And who should stay in the rotation, one or both?
I struggle with this like every single time that I see them pitch. I have always been Whitlock over Houck for the starting kind of role. And I still feel that is the best way. Whitlock and then Houck in the bullpen. But with our bullpen being kind of somewhat inconsistent, I do like Whitlock in the bullpen and then Houck in the rotation. But then we have Houck who is unvaccinated, so you can't trust him in Toronto, and it just totally muffs everything up. So I don't know. It's like, can we have like two Whitlocks? That's what I want.
Yeah, right.
Right, yeah. I don't know where to go there, and I don't think that the team knows where to go that either, because they're having Whitlock start, but then Houck piggyback against Rich Hill, which is kind of how it was before, but it was Whitlock piggybacking with Hill. And I don't even think the team knows where to go with this.
Yeah, and it's kind of making things a little bit more confusing. So, I mean, you know, I've always been on the, I think Houck can start. However, because of this, so after seeing this whole Toronto thing play out once through, I think Houck needs to go into the bullpen because, so leading up to it, you had to move him to the bullpen. He had a relief appearance of an inning and two thirds. Missed that whole four game series. And then by the time he came back and pitched again, it was like 10, 11 days had gone by. He'd only pitched an inning and two thirds. And now, so if you want him in the rotation, you have to stretch him out again. So you're going to have to do that every single time you go to Toronto. You're going to have to move him to the bullpen and then restretch him out multiple times within a season. That just doesn't make any kind of sense at all. So if that's you, and then you would basically then have to like keep Whitlock consistently stretched out. So you then probably aren't using him in high leverage situations, which is where you would want to use him if he was in the bullpen. So it's going to be a giant pain in the ass. I don't think you're really going to want to need to deal with it all that often. So just Whitlock has shown that he can handle the position just fine, like we all kind of thought he would as a starter. Leave him there. Houck goes to the bullpen. And I think we've seen Houck in high leverage situations. I think you just continue to use him there. If you, for whatever reason, if you need to use him to piggyback for long outings, like a 2+ inning outing, he still has the ability to do that. But I think, you know, you should start using Houck how they were using Whitlock last year, and leave Whitlock in the rotation, because it's, I think if you're constantly trying to do, like figuring out who needs to be stretched out and who needs to be left off a roster and then restretched out, that's just messing up your entire bullpen, messing up your plans. I don't think you just really need to deal with it. Whitlock should just remain the starter. Houck in the bullpen, then that's one less thing to think about. And then everybody kind of understands their roles. And then you can kind of go from there. Otherwise, it just adds to confusion for everybody.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I also agree with you that the whole Toronto situation, you know, last week where it just, you know, we had to go through just everything and how much just a couple people's decision just kind of just really threw this team on, you know, on its head when it wasn't in a good position to begin with. It was like already kind of sketchy, and then it just was like, right? So yeah, I agree with you. Whitlock should be in the rotation over Houck. Yeah.
And so Houck was used in to piggyback Hill for three innings after Hill was pulled after having gone four innings and was on a pitch count of 50 pitches, 35 for strikes. Why? Had allowed one hit, no walks to that point in his start. Why was he pulled at that point?
Yeah, that totally boggled my mind. I'm like, he's pitching well. I'm like, yeah, it's against, you know, Baltimore, and it's Baltimore. But even with, why is his pitch count on 50? Like, I'm surprised that that hasn't been kind of like asked about or whatever. Like, why is he only at 50 pitches?
Yeah, having only allowed one hit at that point, he was not real close to the third time through the order in the fifth inning. So it wasn't really like that was an excuse that they could run to. It just seemed like it was getting too cute. But I brought up that specific instance kind of to talk to the larger point. There was a lot made about when Eovaldi was pulled in his start against Toronto. You know, we're a month into the season at this point. I know that spring training was cut short, but we should be past the point of guys on pitch counts, right? Like, people should be stretched out and used to their full ability at this point, right?
I mean, I think so. I am not sure why, you know, Eovaldi, like the Toronto start, you talk about when he went 4 2/3.
No. The I think it was Toronto, right? Or was the one that ended up being the walk off, right? I think he went 6 and was on like 70 pitches and didn't go out for the 7th.
Okay, I found it, yeah. Yeah. I don't know what it has been about, like, honestly, with how quick we've been going. I really do think that we should have let Eovaldi go, like, a little bit longer. I mean, if you're taking, like, you know, someone else out other than Eovaldi, I'm probably going to be like, Cor, what are you doing? Why are you taking Eovaldi out? He could totally go another inning. But with some of these other guys, I agree with it. But then we get into the bullpen, which has been kind of shaky, so...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So we can jump into that next now. I think the bullpen has been largely what we expected. It's been good at times. It's also been bad at times, overall inconsistent. The good, Robles, Strom, Brazier, Davis, inconsistent, basically everybody else, Sauermura, Barnes, Crawford, Valdez, Diekman. Should they have defined roles, which we kind of started to talk about there with Whitlock and Houck? And if so, what should they be?
Outside of Houck, just in the bullpen for maybe like high leverage situations, following somebody, whatever. With how inconsistent, really, this entire bullpen is, outside of Strom, maybe. I don't really know how you can have definitive roles. And it's like, even with Strom, like, I wouldn't put him in like a save situation. I like him where he's at, like the seventh or eighth, you know, come in a sticky situation and you know, in the seventh inning with like one out and like bases loaded, he comes in and knocks it out and gets a couple ground balls, whatever, and gets out of that situation. But, you know, maybe outside of him, I don't feel confident with anyone who is coming in, outside of Houck or Whitlock.
What about Robles? I mean, he's done it before.
Yeah.
Been a closer for a few other teams and is having a really strong season so far. Obviously, you know, he's had a blown save already, but, yeah, you know, overall a 0.93 ERA, not walking anybody at all, yeah, which has been the huge gain so far this year. Would you feel comfortable with him being given at least, you know, first crack at the ninth, but then being told when we have a safe situation is yours, and then kind of going from there?
I mean I totally would, and I think Cor has as well, just kind of where he has been coming in. I mean, sometimes he would be Diekman, and then Diekman will go all crazy, and then Cor will go to Robles, and Robles would like lock it down. What kind of concerns me about Robles, as much as he has been nails, he has a 1.86 home runs per nine. And as a closer, you don't really want to give up the home run. He does have the propensity of just giving up just the home run that just like knocks it off. But out of those guys, I guess definitely, I do think that it would be, for me, Robles over someone like Diekman or Strom or someone else in like that lock, like, or even Barnes, who is just, I watching Barnes right now is quite it's quite difficult to watch.
I'm good.
Yeah, I'm just like, oh, jeez, it's so bad. But yeah, I think that I guess I would lean towards Robles to be like the lockdown quote unquote closer, even though he gives me heartburn.
Yeah, so I guess that would, I guess he's pretty much other than the Whitlock Hauk thing. The larger question there then is, do you think that they should have the defined roles, or it's just kind of, it should be the matchup based way that they've been going about it? Because so I think that I'm of the mind that they, if you give them a more defined roles, then that kind of allows them to stay in that mindset and perform better the entire bullpen, which I think we saw last year when we didn't really know what was going on with the closer role after Barnes imploded. We didn't know what was going on, and then they kind of gave it to Whitlock and everything fell into line after that. That's not the first time we've seen it with this Red Sox team, but when they try and do a closer by committee thing, it always fails every single time. And I just feel like that's what's been happening now. Of course, the other situation is haven't had all that many save situations, so we haven't really had to worry about it. But do you think there's something to that, or do you think it's more just matchup based and they have the guys now to do that with a guy like Diekman who can be that power lefty strikeout guy that they haven't had before?
So I don't know. Maybe I'm probably going to go with both here. I don't necessarily think that we have like a lockdown guy, but I don't think that we have the guys to do the whole matchup thing. So if I was Cora, I would go more towards just give the closing role to Robles and then mix and match with everyone else on the team.
Okay. I dig it. So as we've seen through the first month, a lot of guys have been getting a lot of usage. And one thing that we've consistently seen here with Cora is that we get to the end of the season more towards September, getting closer to the playoffs, and the bullpen has been overused. I've chopped that up to he's never really had a deep bullpen to begin with. So as they've been in high leverage situations, he's only had one or two guys to use. So they've just been burnt out due to that usage. Now with a bit of a deeper bullpen and kind of more guys to turn to, how much of an effect do you think, if any, this the short leash that the starters have been on may have an effect on the bullpen in the short term and in the long term here once we get closer to the end of the season?
Yeah, I think that it's going to have a major effect. I just don't, as much as I love what Waka's doing, he's not going deep into games. We already know Hill is already not going deep into games. And as we discussed previously, we have no idea what the whole Whitlock, Hauk situation is going to be. So we're just relying on a lot of these relievers for multiple innings throughout the entire year. And I think that if we do make it to the postseason or, you know, we will make it to September. So when we get to September, we're going to be just gassed out. Like all of those relievers are just going to be totally gassed out. And I don't necessarily think that is on Cora. I just think that is just the relievers that we currently have on this team that they're just really not that great. And I think Cora is just like, I'm just going to go with this guy. Hopefully he has it. Fingers crossed, eyes crossed, toes crossed. Hopefully everything works out. That's how I think that he's going.
Yeah, I think I understand the third time through the order and all of the data there is for that. But starters have got to be able to get through the fifth inning, and that's barely happening now. And I think that's going to come back to bite him, because when you're consistently asking everybody to go an extra inning out of the bullpen for 2-3 months, that, like, you got to have quite a rotation of guys to get through an entire season, and I just don't think they have it. Even with this, the extra, I mean, you know, by my by my like trustometer, there's basically like two extra guys in the bullpen I think that Cora has this year compared to previous years. And I don't think it's enough to get through it, because that's, I mean, an extra inning every game over the course of a season is like three or four relievers worth of a season. So that, I just, they got to either get the starters going longer, or they got to basically get two Houks in there to bridge those like long relief innings. And then at that point, like, why are you taking up bullpen slots with those guys?
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't know how we put it together with the current bullpen. Cause like I said, I don't really trust anybody. So yeah, it's going to be rough. And the, you know, the back halves of the games going forward.
Yeah. So that was our very upbeat, happy analysis of the first month. Let's dive into some listener questions here to finish it off. First, from Bunny Colvin, do Dieter Jones and Jaron Duran have a future in Boston?
I think one of them does. Maybe not the other. I do think that Jaron Duran does have a future in Boston. I think it will be this year. With Jeter Downs, I don't know if he actually does. He will probably make his like major league debut with Boston. Just the amount of strikeouts that he has put up for the last year and a month is very concerning. It's not getting better, so I'm not really confident with Jeter Downs.
Yeah, I agree. Duran, I think for sure. Downs, they just have a bunch of those like utility middle infield guys. I mean, obviously with Story and Bogarts, like,
yeah,
it doesn't seem like it would be an everyday role, if that. And then they love themselves some Christian Arroyo, so we'd have to unseat that. And so I don't know if that's gonna happen.
Yeah.
Cody Hudman says, it looks like Cora has completely lost faith in Sawamura, putting in guys just up from the minors in game deciding spots over him. What's your take on this situation? Thanks. Well, most recently he was put in a tie game in extra innings, so...
Yeah.
I don't know if he's completely lost faith.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't really been too high on Sawamura for, you know, about half a season or so. So I can see why Cora is just kind of like, we'll kind of use him here and there. But when was like the last time that you felt like really good about him coming in?
Well, I don't know if I've ever really felt bad about him coming in.
Okay.
That's the weird thing is like his line for the season last year was not bad. I mean, the walks were a little high, but like a 10 K per nine, a 3.06 ERA. He got a lot of usage. He didn't have a bad season. Mm-hmm. He had some blow ups in some tough spots. So like it made it seem worse. And yeah. I feel like that's happening again. For whatever reason, he can't strike anybody out this year, which is weird. But his walks are down like almost two full walks per nine compared to 2021. And he has a 2.45 ERA. So it's like, and even the game, the Orioles, the walk-off was an unearned run. So he didn't even get burned on that because it was an error and it was a ghost runner. So it's like doubly unearned. So... that was just kind of like a blow up in a tough spot. I haven't really felt bad. I mean, I think the strikeout thing is weird. And if he continues not striking people out, then I'll continue to not feel great about it. But I generally feel fine when he's coming in to get outs. He generally gets them.
I guess I feel the same way. I feel fine when he comes in. I don't feel great. I don't feel bad. I feel
neutral.
Fine. Yes, exactly. Yes.
They bring him in to get outs more often than not. He gets them.
Yes.
I don't know if I can pronounce that one. at Patio D. We'll go with that. It seems like Haim is deeply committed to building up the minor league system. The question is, could he have added more depth to the team, especially in the bullpen and the outfield, without breaking the bank or depleting the minors? Short answer, yes.
Yeah, you could have signed, Suzuki, who signed with the Cubs? Yeah, that would have been... that would have been awesome. You definitely could have filled in with the bullpen. I mean, yes, he could have done more. Like, I totally agree. He could have done more. What minor league depth was he building? I'm trying to think. Outside of
Renfro,
like,
there was two prospects there.
Yeah,
right?
David Hamilton, and yeah, okay.
I'd still rather have Renfro, but, you know, that's just me. I don't know if it's just me.
It's not just you, honey. It's not.
Okay, thank you.
It's not just you. Renfro was looking pretty bad until, like, this last week where he hit, like, 3 or 4 home runs, and then we have JBJ. So, yes, I would rather have Renfro. I do think that, you know, Haim Bloom really just, I saw what he was doing, but it didn't really help the current team. So, yeah, just not that great. Not that great.
There was also a ton of high leverage relievers that were not high end closers that got signed or moved this offseason before the lockout. Mm-hmm. And they were in on none of them.
Yeah.
Like Kendall Graveman for $8 million is a steal.
Yes.
That's barely more money than you're paying Matt Barnes right now for significantly more production. There's also, who is the other, there's another one that the White Sox, someone else. Anyway, that wasn't the only one. There was a ton. You didn't have to go after the Kenley Jansons or any of the other, like, $15+ million closers to make a splash in the bullpen. You could have added an eighth inning guy or one of the lower end closers to get some depth in this bullpen, and it would have been an extremely minor move. Yimi Garcia, that was another great one. Would have been great. Called for him at the trade deadline last year, wrote an article about him, # gimme Yimi. he moved in this offseason too. He would have been another great one. So there's a ton of options for the bullpen that they could have done, and instead they went with Diekman and Strom, who have been largely what we thought they would be. Strom, we figured, would not walk anybody and be really consistent, and Diekman, we thought, would strike out a lot of people and be really inconsistent, and that's exactly what they've been, which was just more of the same of the people that they already had. So it was just running back the same bullpen that we had last year, just different names.
Yeah. It really makes me just their, you know, the whole team's just inactive period, like, prior to the lockout. Like, I really think that Bloom was, like, told not to do anything. That is what I'm thinking. Because you heard no rumors, nothing. It was, like, crickets from the Red Sox with everything that was going on prior to the lockout. So I'm wondering if he was, quote-unquote, like, told, yeah, don't do anything. We don't know where our money situation is going to be. Don't sign anybody.
Maybe. Well, the Renfro, that happened before, right?
Oh, that is true. Yeah.
But that was shedding, right? Because
that saved them
like $5 million.
Something like that, yeah.
Or maybe it was only two. It was 12 to 10.
Something like
that. I don't remember what. It wasn't a lot, but it did save a few million dollars.
Yes.
Yeah. But then, yeah, we heard more rumors during the lockout and almost thought it was a certainty that Suzuki would be in the outfield. And then the lockout ended and that didn't happen.
Yeah.
So that was a bummer.
Yeah. Those rumors were definitely a fun time, because I was like totally penciling him into the outfield. I'm like, oh, I'm so
super
that's
excited. Yeah.
That is why we moved Renfro. Yeah. No, that is not why we moved Renfro.
Yeah, I felt way better about that. Like, when, I remember we did the podcast when the trade happened, and I was really annoyed about it. And then I was like, I mean, if we had Suzuki, I feel way better about that.
Yep. Yep.
Not so much. House of Kuzu says, isn't it time to give the young guys their opportunity? Durant in place of Bradley, Casas in place of Dahlbeck. What's the worst thing that can happen? They don't hit. It's the same thing Dahlbeck and JBJ are doing, and at least the young guys would be getting experience and reps. So we kind of hit on that. So yeah, I think we agree with JBJ and Durant. Casas, not quite, but very soon.
Yep, exactly.
And then another one. I don't want him to go because he's my favorite player and how painful it's going to be, but when Bogaerts is playing second base for the Blue Jays next season? Oh, Jesus. What?
No, what? No. I don't want to think of Bogey playing anywhere else. I know that there is a huge possibility that he will be. I just don't want to think about it because I would probably just log off of everything for about a week and a half, 2 weeks, and come back and, yeah. Because I would need to grieve.
Yeah, I don't... If that happens, and it's going to be... Like, the waiting is the hardest part, right? And I completely respect the players for, like, I'm not trying to have this conversation in season. So I totally get the it didn't happen before season, so now we have to wait for it to happen in the off season. Mm-hmm. And when you're in your contract year, it makes it that much more scarier that some things are going to happen. But I don't think I can handle just the back-to-back of Mookie and Bogaerts. And I know it's not necessarily back-to-back, but it's still too close.
Yeah.
And then the potential of, like, then immediately Devers. Because I feel like if Bogaerts doesn't happen, they either need to go all in on Devers immediately. But if they let that, like, dangle, then it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And if all three of those guys go within just a few years of each other, I don't know how to handle that.
Yeah. I definitely could not handle that. I mean, I totally understand, you know, Xander not wanting to discuss anything this offseason, whatever. But they have to lock him in. If they don't lock him in, they're not locking in Devers, because Devers and Bogey are, like, they're really, really, really good friends. And if you don't, if as a team, if you don't commit to Bogey, right? Like, basically your star, the hit of your franchise, after you traded away, Betts?
Yeah.
After you traded away Betts? Like, they're, and if, you know, if Devers sees that the team is not even committed to Bogey at that point, why on earth, like, no, he's just going to go somewhere else, and we're just going to lose all three, and it will be very difficult, for me. Yeah.
Devers basically just watched every face of the franchise that he had played with leave, and he'd be like, so wait, what's going to be different about me?
Yeah, yeah. So,
like, they'd really have to, like, really commit to him, and it just doesn't seem like that's what they want to do to anybody.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Yeah. Brother Bob says, Benintendi has an incredible batting average in Kansas City after working out with Mookie and Holt in Nashville in the offseason. Why didn't the Red Sox fix his issues when he was here?
I don't necessarily think that his issues were necessarily mechanical. I think it might have been pressure and other things when it came to Benny. But I'm glad to see that he is thriving in Kansas City. I just don't know if he would have done the same thing here.
I don't think he really had issues when he was here, to be honest. I mean, he had 295, 271, 290. He had 266 in 2019. And then 2020 where he was hurt and just didn't play.
Yeah.
But then last year in Kansas City, he hit .276. Everything was right in line with the years that he was in Boston. Right now, his BABIP is 85 points higher than his career number. His BABIP's .406. So he's super lucky right now. So that's going to regress.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll probably regress right back in line with the rest of his numbers. And, I mean, he had a really good season last year. 17 homers, 8 steals, .276. The OBP was a bit down, but his walks are back up this year. He's a good baseball player. I was kind of bummed when he left. I know Jake was like, his personality sucks, so I'm super happy to see him go. It's like, okay. But I enjoyed having him on the team, and I was bummed.
Yep.
Brother Bob also has a question. Brock Holt is available. Should the Red Sox bring him back? No.
Sadly, no. As much as I love Brock Holt, I will forever love Brock Holt. I will still rock my Holt Red Sox jersey occasionally when I'm rocking around town. They shouldn't bring him back, but I will miss him because he was fun.
One of the better ballpark giveaways, though, was the Red Sox pet Brocks
that they did
for the bobbleheads. That was pretty great.
Yes.
Me using T says, how can a Xander extension happen?
Maybe the team just gives Xander just kind of what he wants. That's just kind of just get it done. Just get it done.
Yeah. Just give him what he wants. Yeah, they need to give him the dollar value that he's asking for, because it's probably fair, or something close to the dollar value he's asking for. But then they need to tell him that it comes at the cost of moving to second. And they need to flip him in story.
Yes.
And say, we would love you to stay, and we will pay you to stay, but it's at second base.
Yes. Yeah.
And I feel good about that. And we'll see. That was it.
Awesome.
Shelly, thanks for filling in. It's great to talk Sox with you. Hopefully we'll have you on after that 13-game win streak I predicted. And then we can have a nice happy powwow. Talk about how awesome that's been and how much they've gained in the standings and how everything is right with the world again. And have a bit of a cheerier conversation next time.
Yes, instead of like all this dread and angry clouds and lightning and all this stuff. So yes, but yeah. Thanks for having me on, even though it was kind of depressing. Thanks for having me on. It was just great to talk about the team.
Yeah. You can find both of us at the Over the Monster website, where we have done roundtables and stuff. Have you done anything besides the roundtables?
Not really on the Over the Monster site, but I have contributed to the roundtables.
Same. I've just been doing the roundtables. You can also find both of us on Twitter. You can find Shelly at ShellyV_643. You can find me at The Spoken Keats. Thanks for listening, and join us next week.